Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is presented by Forever Cheese. Learn more at forevercheese.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Joe Salonia. Our next guest is CJ Beiner, who has opened the Cheese Shop of Des Moines when he was 28 years old and has gone on to also open a cheese-centric restaurant called Cheese Bar of Des Moines as well. When CJ is not in the shop or at the cheese bar, he's usually found enjoying time with his wife, Carrie, and family or on an ambitious fishing expedition. CJ, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Right on. Well, I've been wanting to have this kind of conversation with you. We always have like a brief little interview every time we talk about cheese, whenever we're on the phone. So I wanted to have you on the show leading up to the American Cheese Society Conference, which will be held again in Des Moines, Iowa, a place where you reside, and throw down your cheese game at the cheese shop and at the cheese bar. There is a variety of cheese professionals with different backgrounds that will attend the ACS, right? And for different reasons, some for education, some for networking opportunities, some for showing off their amazing talent in cheese making. For me, I love the cheese, and I love, and for someone who does not make cheese, I love eating the cheese, and it's all about engagement, supporting, promoting, connecting, representing cheesemakers to the broader community. When I say this out loud, these are some of the tenets of what I know why the American Cheese Society was started. And it also sounds like a great way to run a cheese shop, especially the way you explain in my past conversations how you run your businesses. So does that resonate with you as well?
Oh, totally. I'm so blessed to have the opportunity to host ACS in Des Moines. Again, last time it was here is 2016. And yeah, it seems like...
Yeah, time flies, huh?
Yeah, right?
Well, I thought it was like 4 minutes ago.
Yeah. We have a really amazing visitor bureau and convention center, and we're a really great value. The airport and everything, I mean, flights are... I mean, everything kind of lines up to be a perfect host city for a conference like this. I used ACS, when you talk about reasons to attend conference, it was the excitement of finding the next new thing, when the awards are announced, texting the shop to make sure that we have all those cheeses, noted. And it's just such an exciting time. I mean, I can't just... blown away that it's going to be here again, and really look forward to showing off Des Moines, because Des Moines is a really amazing place. Everyone that comes and visits, Mateo Keeler was just here about a month ago, flew in just to visit and do a dinner with Andy Hatch.
Wow,
just like cool. Just like a typical Monday, right? You're just hanging out with
just a Andy Monday.
And Mateo.
Just a Monday in Des Moines,
dinner.
Huh?
Yeah. I got really lucky customers, and they know it too. They know it, but Mateo is just like, I love Des Moines. It's, it's beautiful. Everyone's friendly. It's so clean. It's easy to get around.
Yeah.
It's like, has great restaurants. And it really does check all the boxes. I shouldn't be gloating so much, because, I don't want it to get too big, too fast. We're like the perfect size, but.
There's not a lot of traffic. I remember when I was, downtown, and I forget what year I was visiting, and I was like, hey, I'm going to be at the shop. And you're like, yeah, come on over. I'll see you when I see you. And then it was like rush hour. It was like 5 o'clock. So I plug in the coordinates to get to your shop, and it was just a blue line to your shop. It was like 9 minutes I was at your shop at 5 o'clock.
Yeah. That was everywhere. You can get anywhere in Des Moines in 10 minutes. And there's no such thing. It's no such thing as rush hour.
You can't drive around the block in an hour sometimes in New York. It's incredible. But like, it's so great. I mean, so in a way, your cheese shop becomes almost like a mini museum for all the ACS, you know, talked about cheeses. And I guess for obviously what might become what is your normal set.
Yeah, you know, I feel like a stamp collector a bit when it comes to things like, you know, what we do. You know, we sell cheese. We also sell beer and wine, chocolate and conserva. And we've done that since we opened 12 years ago. We'll be 12 years in November.
Well,
we've gotten so much better at it, but we're ahead of the curve just enough. Uh-huh. We were weird. People did not get us. Our cheese smelled funny. I kept telling everyone they should eat sardines and, you know, try some wine they've never heard of, you know, that had no sulfur or something. You know, they were just like, what are you talking about? You know, right. I remember trying to explain orange wine 10 years ago to somebody in Des Moines, Iowa. Finally, okay. I was like, it's like orange juice. You know, it's just like orange juice. They're like, okay, cool. I got that. All right, good.
You are ahead of the curve, though. That's
just at the right time, though. I really am blessed and really would like, and I recognize that because everything lined up perfectly. We opened the shop in 2011. Everyone said I was crazy. I went on a sabbatical, so travel around the country to glean knowledge from producers and other retailers and you know, mentors, really. They've become, but and I would you know have a drink or be on an airplane or something and just make small talk and say I'm opening this shop and they'd be like, oh, that's exciting, you know, I'm in Boston or something. Well, where is it going to be? Like, Des Moines. And they're like, oh, that will never work. Don't do that. Like, have you ever been to Des Moines, Iowa? Like, what I really recommend. Yeah, it's like, and usually, and I believe this to be true. If people say it's not going to work, it's usually a really good idea.
You know,
when everyone says, oh, that, yeah, exactly. But if everyone says, oh, that's a great idea. Oh, that's an, you know, I had the same idea. Then it's probably not going to, it's not a great idea. It's not unique enough.
In that novel, like not special. Yeah.
Yeah. The timing was perfect.
It wouldn't seem it though. I mean, like, you know, like by most measures, it's 2011. We're still barely crawling out of the Great Recession. Right.
Bank would not give me money. That's for sure. Uh-huh. I got laughed out of multiple banks.
Wow. But you're a young strapping man. You're in your 20s. So you have a youth on your side. That's always great. Right. So,
yeah. It's like 27 years old.
Unreal. And then like, but what led to this decision? How did you get to the point where you're at this 2011? Like, so back up a little, like how did you get into cheese? So back up a little. How did you get to that point?
Okay. So like most of us, interest in food and agriculture, and then you just go down the rabbit hole and, you know, and you realize all food is agriculture. Agriculture is amazing. It's tied to, you know, the planet. The planet's amazing. It's just like, oh, this is a big thing. It's really big. And I love food in general, anything, you know, if it, you know, is sustainable and delicious, I'm like, sign me up.
Did I read you're a chef by trade too? Did that,
not by, you know, credentials or anything. I never got any certificates, for culinary, but that was my aspirations, out of school. I never went to secondary school or anything. I just went, you know, read Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential and said, I'm going to do that. He said, don't go to school, go work in a kitchen. I ended up working in a kitchen, but it also had a market and a cheese counter in a wine shop. It was kind of like a Oakville grocery kind of thing.
Okay.
And it was like Napa-esque, but in Des Moines, Iowa.
Okay.
This was in 2000. Okay. Whoa, so okay. Way ahead of its curve. And I just, you know, I was going to take over the culinary program. I was determined to do that, but I had a great mentor, Barb Horn. She's still a dear friend. She's since retired from cheese and she lives in Mexico now. I can't wait to go and visit her and, you know, hang out down there. That sounds awesome and good for her. But she gave me little samples of cheese and she was testing me. I didn't know this, but she was testing me. So she'd give me Coxswalt or something and be like, yeah, that's, yeah, no, I'm not like really into that. You know, I need a breath mint now or something. And then she gave me Oso Era tea, Onatique Oso, you know, classic, classic. And I, at that time, you know, again, I'm like 20 years old, you know, younger than that. I'm 18, 19 years old. And, I'd never had a sheep's milk cheese before. I mean, who had in 2000, there was no Food Network. There was no term foodie, you know, none of these things. It was not cool to be in food. It wasn't cool to even be a chef. I mean, in any regards, definitely not cool to be a producer or farmer. It was very early on, but I tried this cheese and I remember I just immediately followed her to where the cheese was stored in the cheese case and looked around. I was like, is there other cheeses like this? What is this? And that night was like a big wine tasting. And I remember I sold the whole wheel of cheese. And the owners kind of looked over and they're like, he needs to stay there. And I've been behind the cheese counter ever since.
Wow. And so how did you hone your chops? How did you go from that to opening the cheese shop though? There had to be some things in between, I'm going to guess.
Yeah. Being told no, you know, just constantly being told no, having a really great idea and being told no multiple times. And it's just like, okay, you know what? I just need to do this because I'm sick of being told no. And I'm sick of doing the wrong thing at the same time. You know, not all my ideas are great, but come on, no one was listening. I was at a market. I opened a really awesome market still in Des Moines called Gateway Market. It's a hybrid kind of co-op vibe with the cafe. Cafe's really the anchor there. Amazing food, ramen. They were like rolling out their own ramen noodles. It was all opened by a chef, George Famaro, who's a good friend. He's amazing. And they, you know, elaborate prepared foods and cheese and wine. And then there's also a bakery element too. But cheese and wine were a big anchor, and they brought me in to open the cheese and specialty side of things. Mm-hmm. And it was a, you know, a truly dream come true. I dreamt of working in a market like this and having complete control. But one day I just realized that I was just, you know, I wasn't going to ever get to go to the next level because I was in this kind of high volume, cut and wrap type scenario. I remember this vividly. I wanted to put in a gravity cool. We know what that is, right? No fans, just like a enclosed case where everything was in like
static, you know, cold, static air.
Yeah, exactly. And do all the you know, bloomy cheeses and like geo cheeses in this case and like treat it like make it real special because those cheeses were dying or just you can't really sell those. The packaging's gotten so much better. You look like what people have done with packaging and it's unbelievable. This time though, just that wasn't really a possibility. And I wanted this case and it was one of those instances. It's the last no, we'll call it. And instead, the money was spent on a Burkle slicer, which I was really against the Burkle slicer, mainly because, I mean, it's just like, it's like a Ferrari. It's like, we don't need a Ferrari. We need.
Bro, you didn't want to like blow the budget, you mean?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Like, you didn't want to spend
$8,000 on a slicer? At all. Yeah, but like, you know, the chef partner and everyone's like, we need this Burkle and the stand and everything to go with it. I'm just like, such a, you know, no. And at that same time, I think we got our first shipment of Winamere. And I tasted that cheese, and I was very Eurocentric up until then. I just didn't think American cheese could ever, would ever be anything. And I tried it and just said, what is this? This is unbelievable. It was like that same light bulb when I had, you know, Oso for the first time. And I immediately sent an email, and I do this still to this day, just send random emails to producers. And they typically never respond, but Mateo responded and said, thank you. Yeah, thank you. And yes, we were, you know, consulting with Moans. I had visited Moans the year before and he said, and I noticed some similarities because they just opened the cellars. And I saw pictures and he's like, yeah, I want you to come visit and, you know, you can do a working interview, you know, if you're interested in an internship. And I'm just like, yes.
Internship to make cheese or something else.
Cheese. Yeah. And and at that point, you know, I knew I wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. And, I thought maybe making cheese, would be be that you know, that thing I was looking for. I realized I did not want to make cheese. Making cheese is, you know, it's just, it doesn't have the social appeal that I need. Mm-hmm. I love the people I worked with. I'm still dear friends with all those people. And it's amazing. They're all still in cheese as well, too. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Veronica Pedraza. She's knocking it out of the park. I think making the
unbelievable cheesemaker.
Best domestic goat cheese being made in the United States. I mean, across the board, she's killing it. I mean, she has her awards to kind of stand behind her in that. But she was the cheesemaker there. We were dear friends.
So at the same time, you're saying?
Yeah. So I came on and she was making cheese at Jasper at that time.
So what year are we talking about here?
This would have been 2008, 2009?
2008, 2009, during the Great Recession. You were making cheese with Veronica Pedraza at Jasper Hill.
Yep.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I realized, what's really cool is I realized I didn't want to make cheese. You know, and again, aspect. I just missed
socializing. You wanted to be more.
I miss the customers. I miss sharing. I miss the random conversations. You know, it's the same conversation and the same music. And it's just like being married. You know, I had the group of four. We just all talked, you know.
Yeah.
And it was great. But making cheese is a lot of work. And I knew that. But it's a lot of, you know, I jokingly call it dishwashing because that's what it felt like I was doing, especially as the intern, right?
There's a lot of washing in cheese. Yeah, you're washing.
Wash, rinse, and sanitize. And I was like, I just cleaned that last night. And it's like, clean it again. It's like, oh, man. I think I got a culture like one bad. Like I did very minimal cheese making, but I learned enough. I learned I didn't want to be a cheese maker.
That's an important lesson. And you got to know yourself and you were able to play to your other, to your strengths.
It's 80%, it's 80% just that sanitation. And then, you know, 10% a note taking, and then maybe 10% cheese making. And the cheese in that part was awesome. And I love that. And, you know, like that whole alchemy, it's amazing.
Incredible.
And what a great, amazing place to learn too. And I could have stayed. I mean, I was very tempted to stay. I'll never forget midway through my internship, sitting just in the office doing a sensory, like a tasting at the Cellars, and Andy and Mateo, the brothers, the Keeler brothers, wheel their chairs, you know, really intensely towards me and stare me in the eyes, you know, this intense stare. It's like, what are you doing? And it's like, oh my God, what am I doing? I don't know. I'm eating cheese. No, what do you want to do? Like, and it came out of me. It's like The Exorcist or something. Like, I want to open a shop in Des Moines and I want to sell your cheese and all this other amazing cheese that's made here domestically and show it to the people in Des Moines that really have no idea any of this exists. And I just think it's a great market and great time for that. And a great idea. And that was it.
That's a cool story. That's a cool connection too.
That's how it happened.
And did you say in a past conversation, did you say you had an Aunt and Saxilby moment that you want to share? Is there a connection with this too? In this story?
Yeah, well, I was mentioning, I mean, I'm so honored to be on here because I remember listening to Cutting the Curd with Anne, and she gave me a lot of advice, and ACS as well. ACS is such an amazing resource for anyone in the industry or anyone looking to get in the industry. Or stay current, you know, any of those things. But for me, it was like really a guiding light to opening a shop, you know, finding and making those connections. And she helped tremendously. I can remember it was in Seattle, you know, taking the time. She's busy, right? A lot of people want to talk to Anne.
Yeah, sure.
And she took the time, you know, to spend, you know, with me and talk me through my whole business plan. It was really, really amazing.
Consistently and like just a generous, kind, amazing person.
Oh, so you unbelievable! Talk to, man,
just it's such a loss, but what a legacy! And it speaks to how, you know, it's all about like building this community, right? These connections, these exchanges, these associations, like that energy. Like, well, like I'm gonna guess Andy and Mateo, when they saw you, they were like thinking like, look, this guy's got something going on. Let him tell us, what do you want to do? Right. Like, they were trying to connect and really maybe dial you in, but also listen, right. That's what's that's the best.
Yeah, you know, later it was later that I realized that a lot of people that were opening shops or maybe getting into the industry on a retail never went and put the time in to make cheese.
Uh-huh.
You know, I spent a good solid year making cheese. Wow. Being a cheesemaker, you know, basically. I remember going to Raleigh and Chris Raleigh and spending, you know, I spent like weeks with him, right? And I got to a point where I guess I was asking too many questions and he had me sign a confidentiality. Yeah, I know. And I was just like, no, dude, I'm just open, but yes, I will sign this. But you do realize I am just, and he's just like, nah, yeah.
Yeah, you want to be able to geek out. So you want to really, you were trying to have an intrinsic understanding of the cheese.
Yeah.
Wow, that's funny. All right. So you went to Jasper Hill, then you went to Raleigh Cheese. Where else did you, you did like a tour of cheesemakers and you got your hands in the vat of these places?
Yeah, I call it a cheese sabbatical. You know, so after Vermont, I spent my days off in Vermont making cheese with Peter Dixon, you know, and the likes and, you know, all over. But then, Wisconsin, then ended up in California at Cowgirl Creamery. And that was where I wanted to see if I could do some retail work and see if I had it, you know. And so I worked a holiday season in the Ferry Plaza building.
Whoa, busy place, I bet.
Yeah, they do. Like, I just had a really good week at the shop. I'm like super stoked because, you know, it's time of year where, you know, you need those really good weeks. The money's not coming in. It's starting to go out a little. They're trying to just plug holes. But we did, you know, like $25,000 at the shop. And, you know, to people in big cities, I know this because, like, for Cowgirl, that was like a day, like a holiday.
Really?
Yeah, you know, really. It was $20,000+. That was just mind-boggling. You know, like eight mongers all selling cheese at the same time.
Just super busy. I mean, different bills, different salaries, different costs.
Yeah, I mean, still, San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking crazy real estate and all that. But still, just to be moving that much cheese is that's something to see.
Yeah, shop. So for us, I was looking at, you know, the report. And it was about, you know, $8,000 worth of cheese. It was, you know, it's roughly like 400 cheese transactions. If you average each of those transactions, it's not a quarter pound. You know, there's so many, you know, things that came from the pandemic, changes, good or bad. A good one is that people started to learn how to cook maybe and eat cheese. People are buying more cheese and bigger pieces of cheese.
Like I love that.
Tiny slivers. Yeah, it's not a thing. Everyone's like third half pounds these days. So, you know, we're talking like a couple hundred pounds of cheese went out of our shop last week. To me, that's freaking awesome.
That's good progress.
That's going back to all the cheesemakers because we work, you know, only with independent small cheesemakers. And that money does trickle back down. And it's really important. And if I could just be inspiration for anyone that's in a market where they're telling them, no, hey, I'm in Des Moines, I can do it. You can do it.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, I bet there's some advantages but to being there too. But like total point is taken though. Like our international counterparts, my perception is they eat more cheese than we do here. And I know this just from traveling a little bit and seeing how people purchase cheese and what they haul out of the store. Yeah, the price point could be different and lower. Excuse me. But like when I do a demo sometimes, and I still love doing demos, I learn so much about people. I get like 150 inputs of opinions and vibes in a short span of 2 hours, 3 hours. And I can't tell you how many in that span, someone will ask me, they'll buy like a little piece of cheese and they'll say, how long is this good for? Right. And what they're trying to ask me is, how long can I let this sit in my fridge before it goes bad? I think is the question. So I usually give them my smart ass Northern New Jersey answer about 45 minutes in my house. Like it'll be eaten. It's gone. Like, you know, that's not the answer they want. But like you still have them in the crowd. But I do feel like people are eating. I know I'm eating more cheese because of the pandemic because I made more meals out of cheese during that time. And it kind of now it's a little more normal for me to whack down a whole piece of Longra or something. Like it's no big deal. I eat the whole thing. Like I'm not looking to, you know, save it for another day. So you're seeing that kind of pattern grow too, right?
Oh, 100%. And I think a true testament to that would be something like Latour, you know, or those individual cheeses. It's like,
yeah.
That's a serving of cheese. That, but or longer or a pasta, that is a serving of cheese.
Yeah,
but that totally. Also can be your primary protein for a meal. You know, add a salad.
Yeah,
you know, in a glass of wine.
Salad.
It's a complete meal. Enjoy.
100%.
I mean, and we're seeing that with raclette. I mean, we sell more raclette than we ever and we're, you know, a bit behind, but I'm sure shops everywhere are seeing this and people, that's a meal. People are seeing that as a meal. People are making more fondue, you know, they're making, you know, tarte de flette or, you know, or they're just, you know, eating a whole Rush Creek because it's really freaking delicious. And you should just eat whole wheels of Harbison and Rush Creek. I mean, it's a thing. I mean, we're really lucky. We're in like the golden age of cheese. I believe in the US right now.
I love the idea that the golden age. I hope you're right about that. Sometimes it can feel like we're in the dark ages of just the world, but I love the idea of being in the golden age of cheese. But let's put a pin on that for just a second. We're going to take a short break right here, and I want to dig into more about what's going on with it's at the shop with the cheese bar right after a message from our sponsor.
Forever Cheese, a leading importer of cheese and specialty food, has sourced exceptional products from Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Croatia for 25 years. Offering a wide selection of artisan cheese, charcuterie, nuts, crackers, preserves, and more, their products are sold in stores nationwide. Forever Cheese seeks out the best of the Mediterranean and focuses on sharing stories from their family of producers. Each product has a unique story, and their goal is to celebrate each one. From Drunken Goat to genuine Fulvi Pecorino Romano, Mostarda to Mitica Marcona Almonds, and Duya to Jamon Iberico, Forever Cheese is proud to offer products they love from people they believe in. Their passion, quality, and range are unmatched. Learn more at forevercheese.com and look for their products in a grocery store, restaurant, or specialty food shop near you.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here chatting with CJ Bernhardt here on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. CJ,
yo,
you got a restaurant too, the Cheese Bar.
Yeah. So this happened by mistake. this was a mistake, mind you.
Really? How does that? How does one accidentally open up a restaurant?
Well, when you have a shop, it's always like you want to make sandwiches because it's like, oh, you think like I have bread and cheese, I might as well make grilled cheese. Well, we started that about 6 months after we opened the business, and it just was an animal. It overtook our business. So anyone thinking or in the same position, it happens. You know, be careful what you wish for. People were waiting for an hour. We have, mind you, we have like 26 seats, 28 seats, something like that. Small space. People were waiting an hour to have a grilled cheese sandwich and like a cheese plate and some wine at our shop. So we knew it was a problem. I also have some business sense about me, and I was like, we're not making money. We're breaking even doing this the way we're doing it. We need more tables. We need to be more efficient. It's like either we stop doing it, right? And then, you know, a bunch of people don't have jobs anymore, we expand. And I sat down with those people that wanted to, you know, be on the culinary side of things. Our staff is like 20 at that time. You know, we're down to 5 people now at the retail shop, and we're 20 plus at the restaurant. But, I sat down with them and said, hey, do you want to do this? And they said, yes. I said, like, let's do it then. So, we opened the Cheese Bar. 2015.
Wow.
And
but this is an ambitious place. This isn't just a grilled cheese place. You have 15 beers on tap. You have an ambitious wine
30,
listing.
30,
okay, sorry,
30
my bad.
Yeah.
30 on tap, ambitious wine listing from what I could tell. Many of them are petit natural and not your mainstream you know, Pinot Grigios or you know, Santa Margarita Pinot Grigio. I mean, you got like a lot of deep diving type interesting wines. You got your usual suspects. You got raclette, fondue, grilled cheese, mac and cheese, soup, salad. But you make some of your own house charcuterie. When I visited you, you had your own pâté, your own pâté en croûte, or your own terrine.
Yeah. So you meant Brett McClavey.
Mm-hmm.
We jokingly call him my ginger doppelganger.
Okay.
Everyone that works in the business is like kind of like a heavy set bearded person. So we all kind of look alike in some sense. Everyone thinks that, you know, that's CJ. It's like everyone knows me, but not at the same time. But so Brett was a driving force for the restaurant and his passion for charcuterie and like making those things. He did go to culinary school. He studied, went to France. Just in love with sausage, and he does an amazing job with force meat. Like, he's just really got it. It's a science, as you know, coming from that. I mean, it really is.
It's totally.
There's makers and there's cooks, you know, and then there's sausage makers.
And
that ladder. And I joke and say he's so tied into to pork. He has pork fat coursing through his veins. And then as soon as I say that, I'm like, oh, that's probably not a good thing. And I'm like, but it is also probably true. It's like the man just like lives for this stuff, you know? And that passion and, you know, his willingness to want to do that led to us actually partnering. So he's a chef partner in the restaurant.
That's really great.
I told him this, I said, I can't be in two places at once. And I'm not going to give up on this. I'm wholeheartedly in at the shop, and I will help and do any and everything I can to make this restaurant successful, but I can't be there, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how it works. And I think, you know, it's confusing to some, but you know, I have people and, you know, new employees, and they're like, who are you? What do you do? And they realize that, you know, I get called when there's any problem. So if there's, you know, a customer harassing someone, you know, I'm the one that has to, I'm there calling the cops, you know, the ice machine's not working. I'm there getting the ice machine to work, or if something catches on fire, you know, I'm there, you know, whatever legal issue, if you need a cash advancement, you know, all those things, I'm there. And I jokingly refer to myself, I'm like the owl, right? I'm always just like, I'm there. And I'm also there at like night when people aren't around, or, you know, they don't see me, but I'm always there.
Yeah. And you're married and you have two young children, right? Your wife, Carrie Beinert. Am I saying your last name right? Beinert, right?
I like the way you say it. I'm going to let you go with it. I'm going to start saying it, Beinert.
How do you say it?
Well, Beinert.
Beinert. Dang it. Sorry. Yeah,
it's German. It's German, but no, it's okay.
My bad. Please excuse me. Beinert. CJ Beinert and Carrie Beinert. So you're married, your wife, Carrie, who I've met briefly.
I like Beinert. I'm going to go with Beinert from now on.
That'll be
the
French version. CJ Beinert. Beinert. Yeah. And so you, how involved is, or was your wife more involved and is she still involved?
Yeah. Involved. I was a cheesemonger. She was a QuickBooks monger and still is. That's a lot of the, you know, the business side.
Oh, hey, it keeps you straight.
Yeah, 100%.
I'll tell you if you're 100%. Out of bounds with the budget then.
Yeah, 100%. Payable, accounts receivable, you know, she lives by that, which is really helpful. And just being a solid partner, that was kind of our goal. You know, in marriage, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're it's a partnership, and this business is going to be a partnership. So we did it together. But, you know, her passion is art and education. She's working now. With the local schools doing substitute teaching. She has a permanent position currently doing some cool stuff in the same school that our kids are going to, which has been really neat. But she's kind of a shoe-in for an art teacher or something like that, which I always had a crush on the art teacher. So I'm like, living out my childhood fantasy, I guess.
That's but, happy guy, it sounds like. So.
Yeah, she'll always be involved, though, 100%. Yeah. You know,
so you have a marriage, you have family life, you have a restaurant life. I sometimes hear about fishing. So I always sense about you that you've found the secret sauce on how to mix and manage business and do a life balance. Maybe it's you keep a certain schedule. Is that one of the biggest clutch moves? Like, don't try to open 8 days a week. Like what is, what's the best move on the chessboard to try to strike that for you? What is that?
Man, it's slow money, right? We've always been that way. We started the business. Every, you know, bank just laughed at us. Partners weren't going to work with our minimal margins and profitability, as anyone in this business knows. It's gotten only harder, but we realize being open book, you know, sharing that with everyone and understanding that we're all in it together was really important. So we, you know, Ari Weinzweig Zingerman's was a mentor and still is. He's someone, you know, he tells everyone, like, here's my number, call me. You can actually call the guy and like he just will help you. He's a freaking amazing.
So I know awesome. He answers my emails. I'm like, whoa, it's like it's
all
just,
the time.
Just, yeah, again, another hours. Just incredible person.
So he in Zingerman's have been really great. And I remember talking to him before opening the shop, being like, hey, I'm a little nervous. Everyone's telling me Des Moines is a bad idea. And he goes, I'm in Ann Arbor, Michigan. How's it any different?
There you
like,
go.
Mic drop. You know, it's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
There's like an advantage maybe in some way. Yeah. You know, you can kind of just see, you can see the forest and the trees in a place like a Des Moines or a Grand Rapids. But like you've got, but you're not open 7 days, right? You're closed 2 days,
Sundays and Mondays. So
close,
it's always been
close Sunday and Monday.
A family business. Coming from retail, you know, Sundays are a big day. They're also a day where it's usually mandatory for management to work. I never wanted to get into that and have that be a thing. Most of my staff has been with us now 10 years.
Wow.
It's really amazing. We're kind of turning over, actually. My shop manager, who's 9 years, is, you know, moving. He's relocating to South Carolina. So if anyone down in the Carolinas is looking for an amazing manager, hit me up. Or if anyone's looking to be an amazing manager and wants to relocate to an awesome place like Des Moines, hit me up.
There you go. Perfect.
But he got this amazing opportunity. You know, his wife was the only connection here, and she's like, you know, I can work remote and want to go explore, and so they're going to go do that, and I'm happy for them. But it's like, I'm not so bummed about losing a manager, though it's, you know, it is, you know, it's kind of stressful business wise. But I'm really bummed losing such a good friend, you know, and that's what we all are. We call ourselves like a cheese family, and we really are a family of sorts. You know, we hang out outside of work. If you're going to work with somebody or a group of people, you best like who you're working with.
Well, that's the litmus. If you dig hanging out with them after you've worked all day with them, that means you like that person. That means it's a good company, and you got a thing. You got a special thing, actually. It could be a precious time to really cherish, because it's a chapter. It's a time where
let's face it. No one really likes working with other people. You know, it's just a matter of toleration, and it just makes tolerating working with others when you like them as a person.
That's a strong statement. I mean, sometimes, I don't know. I mean, I don't get to be around people like you do. You know, many times I'm in the home office. I love being around people. Some people are shocked. I'll do a store demo. They're like, what do you do in a store? I was like, I need it sometimes. I need to talk with a lot of people in a short span of time. And I also love just the interactions. I love trying to understand people and discover the good in people along the way, hopefully. But I miss the days when I worked in kitchens, when, you know, where we had like this real family and strong bonded, like team-like thing, because we would do a lot of hard work together, and then we'd go ahead and you know, have some, you know, we'd see each other at the bar, at a barbecue on our day off or something. We'd just see each other.
Well, I think that's what makes working together possible, honestly, is when you break down those barriers and those walls and you can talk about things, you know, and everyone has their strengths and you can play to those. And that's what I guess I'm referring to in a team is, mm-hmm. is having that, you know, that communication. And that only comes from, you know, breaking down those walls. And I think having meaningful relationships, you know, outside of the day to day, you know, no one just clocks in and clocks out.
Yeah.
In our businesses, and no one's there to get rich, myself included. You know, if that was the case, you know, we'd have like 6 stores in a warehouse shipping cheese across the country and be open 7 days a week.
Not like selling like real estate condos in a housing boom, but according to some of the people I know that do that, they're doing pretty good. But inflation has impacted, I mean, everything, right? So, but you've seen you've told me you've seen some kind of benefit. And you were kind of talking about it a little bit before, but you're saying the gap is smaller between like going out to eat what do you mean by that?
I'm interested to talk to others, in retail in other parts of the country about this, but we've always sold this ultra premium product and, yes, $15.99 used to be the most expensive cheese. Okay. Some can remember that. And then it was 20, then it was 29. Now it's 40, 50, and it's always been this like, wow, this is a really expensive thing. But now everything is really expensive. Food is, kind of caught up to what it should be, right? Like eggs, for instance. It's a good example.
Dude, a bag of chips. I tried to buy a bag of my favorite snack, my favorite cheesy snack, Pirate Booty. I was in one of those big stores. It was $7.95. I dropped it like it was a hot piece of lava. I had to like really talk myself into it. I'm like, what? $8 for Pirate Booty? This must really be Pirate Booty.
That's hilarious.
Must be some real Pirate Booty inside.
But our eggs have always been $6 a dozen. They were five. Only in the last probably 2 years did they go up to six. But even at five, people thought I was crazy. Yeah. 10 years ago, I was paying $5 a dozen for eggs in our restaurant because an egg's not an egg,
There's so much there's a rainbow of quality for eggs. I mean, there's a scale. I mean, yeah. I hope I could always afford a good egg because there's a difference in how it tastes. And I consider it a money well spent when I buy the better egg. I'd rather give it up somewhere else. Like I'll skip a Starbucks run if it means having better eggs, good egg. It comes out of a chicken's butt. Like get the good egg.
We have a farm that just makes eggs for our restaurant. That's their only thing. Yeah.
Wow.
They raise chickens and produce eggs just for our restaurant. And
does it wind up on a croque madame?
We call it a royale.
Is it because it's like European, like Pulp Fiction or
yeah, exactly. Just kind of like a play, but it's just an open faced grilled cheese with Mornay and an egg. It's some local ham and bacon. It's pretty good.
Hell yeah. I love the sound of that.
But now people are like, wait, you got $6 eggs? Like, hey, can I get some of those eggs? it's like our eggs are a deal now.
It's a deal. Yeah, it's a deal.
And I feel like just in general, people, they're looking for quality. People are sick of getting ripped off, buying $8 Pirate Booty. It's crazy.
The gap is smaller. That's what you mean.
Yeah, something real and authentic. And I mean, more often than not, people are like, "Wait, that's all that cost?" It's like, yeah.
Great service in an independent shop like yours. You're going to get great service. Like it's an experience.
In tip, and I didn't want to do tip. I just was like, I'm just against tip. I don't want to do tip. Everyone's going to make money. We'll pay them. Don't leave a tip. The tip is you coming in here. Thank you so much. You're like more of a European thing. That's our whole thing. It's like, how can we be more European? Uh-huh. It's all about the service, the quality of the product. And this is in the shop, not the restaurant.
Yeah, right. The ship. The tip jar counter.
No, lying on the receipt, and customers are like writing it in themselves, and like,
oh, gotcha, right, of course, yeah.
Give me the first right there, and like, you have to have a tip line, so we put a tip line in, and wow, that really changed things.
So you do have a tip line, you're saying, at the retail shop?
Yeah, at the retail shop, because of what you're saying, the service aspect. There's so much there.
So much service.
That goes into mongering. And so anybody with the shop, and if they're thinking about it and doing it, not doing it, I think everyone does it now. Everyone probably charges a credit card charge too, but which we don't. But
everyone should do it and feel good about it. Like I think anybody listening to this podcast, I'm pretty sure, is cut from that cloth. I just wish we could tell their the folks who don't listen to this podcast, if there's a way to get them to, but I think it's progressing in a good way. I do feel that there's more tip conscious, the consciousness of the minds of tipping is, I think, broadened. What is your wish for the cheese community in the American Cheese Society? Like, if we're going to, have any grace notes before, cause we're going to getting near the end of the program here, but I want to make sure we're fitting this in. you know, as a cheese shop owner, what would you wish for the ACS and the cheese industry? You've talked about how it's enriched you. What would you hope and wish for that?
You know, I just hope it we need more independent retailers in our retail landscape. And that, I don't care if you're selling flowers or meat or herbs, anything, you know, like stationery or fabric. I don't, you know, as long
as those are good add-ons to think about. Flowers and stationery, actually. I mean, seriously, why not? I mean, you have the conservas, the chocolate, throw a few flowers in there. Some cool stationery.
I got enough going on. I don't need to do that. But, you know, it's getting, you know, more independent retailers, brick and mortar shops throughout the country, I think is really important. For our producers, for the farmers there, you know, as we live in, you know, a time where, you know, we have three main grocers, you know, in the whole country or something, you know, it's kind of scary. They can control a lot and they can apply a lot of pressure, you know, to those producers, and that frightens me. But if a lot of little guys get together, we make a big difference. And so I think ACS is a really great, you know, resource and stepping stone for anyone in the business or thinking about entering the business. And I'm also always open. I've talked to a lot of people for good or for worse. I mean, maybe I tell you what not to do, you know, a bunch of really dumb ideas or something, but, you know, share my contacts, you know, reach out, DM me on Instagram, email me directly. My email's on our website, Cheese Shop. You know, I'm an open book because I really do think, you know, that's what we really need is more of these independent shops. And it's more of the European model as well, too, if you will. You know, you have the fromagerie and then you have the grocery store. Both you can get great cheese. But if you want to find that farm-made raw milk cheese, you're going to go to the fromagerie. It's not going to be in a grocery store. And that's kind of the delineation that we need in our country. And then the bridging the gap between the consumer and the producer, you know, I think ACS does a really good job with that, you know, with the catalyst being, you know, being the retailer. You know, wholesaler, you know, someone like yourself, you know, that's, you know, selling cheese, you kind of get a gauge kind of what the industry is doing, promote things, you're changing the landscape and enriching people's lives.
Yeah, we're the connector, right? But that the catalyst really is the cheese, really, right? The cheese
100%.
Itself, right? Yeah, I like to think I'm a connector. I like to refer to myself that way, if anything. If I had to pick a generic word, that's what I like to sometimes just think, you know, simply, or be sure I'm doing that. You know, I think we all want to be doing that. Connect the cheese with the producer, with the customer, create the isosceles triangle, you know?
Yeah. At the end of the day, everyone gets a little piece, you know, we take our fair piece, you get your fair piece, the producer gets their fair piece and, you know, and it works. And that's what needs to be done.
For a healthy landscape. And of course, now getting into the landscapes and all that, but even just getting the cheese sold in a healthy state is I'm looking at it on the other end too. Like that's the priority I want to see happening more and more, or growing, you know, like,
education. We just got to educate our customers like we do and just tell them what sucks, you know, stop eating that. That's bad. You know, or if you like it, I mean, that's fine, but that's really ammoniated or that's really dry.
Maybe we wouldn't be in this dilemma if we can get people to open their minds a little more to have cheese as a meal, right? This, I think, is a good thought. We need to have cheese as a meal, like just as a normal thing. If I tell this to my Uncle Louie, he's like, what are you talking about? It's a snack. like no, Uncle, well, you just made a meal out of it. You just didn't call it that. But like literally intentionally make a meal, you know, out of cheese, I think is a beautiful thought for so many cheeses.
Well, so many people eat cheese before a meal. And they get, I mean, you get, you're full by the time it goes to eat your meal. Eat cheese after a meal, you know, just have a few nibbles and then, you know, like you're saying, or just, you know, have cheese, multiple courses of cheese throughout the day. You have breakfast, lunch, and dinner of cheese. I mean, it's pretty versatile that way. Come say hi, come to the shop, you know,
100%
for ACS, go to the cheese bar, hang out. get a drink. I mean, it's a laid back place, the cheese bar. It's a, you know, that's what it's meant to be. It's not like super fancy. It's casual, but a really great, great cocktail program. Our beverage director there is a dear friend of mine. He does all just an amazing job there. If anything, just come for a drink.
Well, hold on to your cheese knife, because with this, you never know. If the podcast, you got some extra listeners, you might have to be resorting to the Resi app or something that week. Who knows? Good luck with all the people lining up down the street for your grilled cheeses. But CJ, thanks so much for joining me today on Cutting the Curd to talk about what's going on with you and your world leading up to the ACS conference in Des Moines. And good luck. Yeah, good luck with all the people flooding your shop and restaurant.
Oh, yeah. No, it's couldn't be happier. It's awesome. I'm excited. And thank you again. This is really awesome.
I'm so glad we could do it. And many of us will see you soon. All right, everyone. You can follow CJ on Instagram at Cheese Shop DSM. Plus, you could follow us on Instagram at Cutting the Curd. And please follow me at Sting Chef. Please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, please give us a 5-star rating if you like us a lot. It will mean so much and really help us broaden our audience. Lastly, if you're headed to Des Moines and you like running or you want to sign up to run or to support the runners in the CheeseLeets 5K, please visit CheeseLeets.org to learn more. That's cheese. I should just spell it out. That is cheese. And then Leets, LETES.org, CheeseLeets.org. All right. Thanks, everyone. And if you love someone, send them cheese.
Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.